This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 2 Legal Regulatory Issues Call, taking place on the 21st of December, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Michael Fleming. Please begin.
Hello, everyone, and greetings to everyone around the world, and thank you for joining us for another hour of policy development in the Work Track 2. I note that there are many individuals on holiday at this time of year, and I thank you to those that have shown up to deliberate today. Before we get into the topics that we have today, I note that Kathy had a question that she wanted to ask, and I have an answer for her when she has finished.
Hi, this is Kathy Kleiman. Happy holidays, everybody. Before the recording started, there was a question about attendance, because people are on holiday, and I raised the question, which I now raise on the record, of what is the pattern of these meetings for Subteam 2? And I noted that when I first started, they were on Thursday afternoons Eastern time, and now they seem to be both in the evening at various times and Thursday morning. And if I'm trying to discern a distinguishable pattern, and if other people knew it as well, it might be easier to track and participate in these important meetings. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy, for the question. And, yes, just to state on the record, as for the Working Track 2 meetings, I do note that normally our pattern in the past was to meet on Thursdays at 21 UTC. However, recently Sophia Feng has joined us as co-chair and is our newest member in the leadership team. And she and I are now working together in helping facilitate these discussions. And she is based in China as well, and myself being in APAC, as well as her being in APAC, we felt that it was much better to have a time that wasn't always situated at a time that was very disadvantaged for us. So we decided to enact the rotating times, which take place at 21 UTC, 15 UTC, and 3 UTC. That was stated on the record about 2 or 3 meetings ago. My apologies on that not being well informed. We do try to have these calls sent out a month in advance on a schedule. I believe that's sent out in the newsletter, but we will definitely make sure to better inform you when they will take place. So this meeting is now taking place at 15 UTC. The next one will take place, I believe, at 21 UTC and then 3 UTC and then that rotation from there. So I hope that answered the question. And now that that is on the record, let's move on towards our topics. So this week we are returning to an old friend, the registry agreement topics, as well as the registry protections, noting that We have about an hour today. I'd like to try to split this in half, and because we're already 10 minutes in, let's see if we can't end at 12 at half past the hour with the registry agreement and move on to the registry protection, since that has a little bit more material in there. So, before I forget, does anyone have any SOI updates that they would like to inform us about? Hearing none, I will then move on to the registry agreement discussion. Could we please have the registry agreement stock half forward or proposal uploaded. Thank you. And for that, Sophia has actually kindly put this together with the help of staff. I'm summarizing our deliberations up until now, and I will let her go over the material for this. Sophia, I turn the microphone over to you.
Thank you, Michael. This is Sophia for the record. Hi, everyone. So for the base registry agreement, I put down this document. Just keep in mind this is really a preliminary proposal or progress document for this topic. I think, I don't know if everybody read this document, for the people who that are going to be in audio or in audio, I would prefer to summarize it and maybe read through some of them, and then seeking your feedbacks on this. So for the base registry agreement, for the direction of the discussion of this topic was highly dependent upon the work in a number of different areas during the discussion. So we should keep in mind of this. But the work group, WorkTrack, has conducted some of the preliminary discussions on the different approaches to the base registry agreement, including analyzing various pros and cons exercises for the single base registry agreement or maybe a multiple base registry agreement approach. For the summaries of the discussion high level, we compare the single registry agreements or multiple registry agreements approach. And the high-level arguments for a single-based registry agreement focus on the predictability, fairness, efficiency, and the lack of clear and definitive boundaries around potential categories that will warrant a separate agreement. And for the high-level arguments for a different agreement, I was focused on the need for the ICON to recognize more fully supported different business model for operating the TLDs and the fact that exemption were difficult to obtain in 2012 round. So indicating that maybe it's cleaner to have different versions from the outset. And the WorkTrack also consider and discuss the 52 comments on this topic. And would like to continue to revisit the issue as other discussions, for example, on the deliberation of categories moving forward. So WorkTrack appear to be converging on the concept of single-base registry agreements with flexibility for different business models. And one group members suggest that there should be no presumption that every TLD operates using an open model. And also ICOM, the second is the ICOM staff and the board should be open to listening about other models incorporating other sophistications. So in this vein, WorkTrack members suggested brainstorming types of business models and corresponding provisions and options in the base registry agreement for this model. So from the WorkTrack deliberation until now, there seems to be a general agreement that there are core provisions of the base registry agreement that applies to all, while there appears to be key concerns around the difficulties in obtaining exemptions. So the outcome might be along the lines that the high-level agreement that reached so far is to maintain a single base registry agreement, but with the clear systems of exemptions and variation to be used based on the categories and other factors for different TLD types. So that was the summaries and the consensus that's been reached so far by the WorkTrack. So as a collective whole, the following path moving forward was proposed to WorkTrack for further consider in the proposal to the full working group. So first of all, we propose it would be beneficial for the WorkTrack to to recommend a scaled-back court agreement with additional specifications per category, with the goals of a single agreement with a more clear, more structures and efficient methods of obtaining exemptions. Just keep in mind that in the documents, there are 11 categories of different TLD registries are listed, and these are the brainstorming outcomes for the WARTRAC members. However, we do believe that those categories are still under definition, under the progress of defining more clearly whether they actually are legitimate TLD registry operator with consensus. For example, the closed generic here, if we need to make sure that if closed generic is the type of the TLD registry operators, then contract provisions may be needed if it is allowed. I urge the WARTRAC to take a look at the documents on these tables, and then we deliberate some questions for each type, maybe for further discussions. And question here is when the deliberations, it is difficult to address the question whether we should maintain the current restriction, however, pursue additional restrictions pertaining to some rights period, land rush, and other registry activities. It was discussed in the work group. Some questions and suggestions were raised by the group needed to be discussed further. However, a lot of these issues seems to be within the remits of the RPM's PDP working group. So first we need to discuss within the work groups, but should we discuss this in topic? So if there is agreement that we should, then sometime I'd be needed to articulate it, what the specific issues are with these mechanisms. So, for example, the question was raised by the impact about the TM Sage records mark when they released from the TM Sage. There was they already needed, so there will be a premium name and high price related to this TM Sage record. So, should holders of TM record mark may be given first refusal where the name is released for reservations. And there are also questions, for example, the predatory pricing was mentioned by the work group, WARTRAC members. Should the predatory pricing can be dealt with more explicit for provision in the PIC? So those type of questions will be addressed here. And third part of the path is the from the deliberation, there appears to be no consensus built so far around some additional questions may be addressed from the issue report. For example, the question that was listed, should the base registry agreement be available in different languages? So it was pointed out on this, for this question, it was pointed out that the staff, that the translation of the agreement is already available in the AGB in different major languages. So this question should be probably specifically dealing with the execution of the agreement rather than the contents. And for example, can registry execute agreement in Chinese without the limitation of the English version always prevail? Or maybe the other languages is the same. So this question we need to address that as well. And there are other questions, for example, should rules and definitions requirements be established around the selling and maintenance of the premium name? And the last question will be, should there be rules and restrictions around registry pricing particularly around premium names. So this is so far that I put out together with Michael for this topic. So I want to seek comments from the World Track on, you know, the summaries and the high-level agreements and also the path moving forward. Any questions, feedbacks from the World Track, that would be really appreciated.
Thank you, Sophia. Yeah, anyone have a question?
Sure.
Does anyone have a question about what we're doing at the current time? Or what we're doing, what we're exactly doing here? Is there any confusion about that, or does everyone understand? Okay, Kathy, you have a question. Please go ahead.
No, you asked if there was any confusion about what we're doing here, so let me ask about that. And then I have some more specific questions. Thanks.
So what is your confusion, if you don't... Sorry. Let me rephrase the question. Are you just confused at what we're talking about here, or are you confused at some specific area of the document?
Well, let me ask. First, this is laying out, the space registry agreement is laying out some form of consensus that's arisen from the sub-team? Question mark.
Yeah, so that is what we're doing here. Right now we're looking at the discussions that we've had on the registry agreement and trying to basically move towards consensus, or in better terminology, no opposition in regards to what we consider as high-level agreement. And this is based upon the temperature of the room, I guess you can say, or what has been discussed up until now. On this point, when the question was raised on a summary, whether or not there should be multiple registry agreements based upon different red TLD models that that is being discussed at the full working group level, most of the feedback was that we received said that we should keep a single base registry agreement that would be more have more so specifications that are tailored towards different types of models. Now, this is also dependent upon the fact of whether or not there will be different TLD models, but all the same, what we can discuss here is whether or not we have one single registry agreement with different specifications, or have the multiple registry agreements based on the model, different models. So I'll let you go ahead and respond to that.
Okay, I was part of the editing of the first base registry agreement, so this is something I can't impose on us, unless that's changed, that they don't want to negotiate independent agreements for hundreds or more registries. So they want the base registry agreement. So that seems to make sense. Nobody seems to be disagreeing with that, which makes sense. It's the details that I don't understand. So one would be a definition of exclusive use registries and whether that's different than brand registries, because it's defined as a keyword registry limited to one registrant and affiliates, which is currently a brand registry. So question, is exclusive use registry different? And I'll pause. I've got more questions too, but I don't want to dominate. You know, I'll take my hand down as other people have it, but I'll keep putting it up. But thanks. So first, what is an exclusive use registry?
No, thank you. That's a very good question, and I have an answer for that, but I would like to note that we didn't want to get into the specifics of the different TLD types within this discussion, since that's not necessarily the kind of the meat of that. That discussion is being held at the full working group level, and rather than centering around that, it is better for us to see if we can... brace upon the aspect of whether or not it would be beneficial for different agreements. But to answer your question on exclusive use and a brand TLD, not all TLDs are not all CLDs qualify as a brand per the requirements, but then some are exclusive use where they may be, this gets a little bit on the closed generic discussion as well, but some are not necessarily generic in nature, but at the same time, they can also be used exclusively, but while not qualifying as a trademark. And then, Jeff, you have your hand up as well, so please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. So without getting too much into detail on the types, because that's really for the overall group, this one is, Kathy, that there's no restriction on any registry applying for a non-generic term to use it as an exclusive registry. In other words, there's no restriction on someone applying for .tzq, I just made that up, and then wanting to use it completely for itself. It is neither a generic term that fits within Spec 11, and someone can, in fact, apply for that to be used as exclusive use. There are also cases where there may not be trademarks that have been granted for certain terms, either because they're after the cutoff date or they're just no it's just not generic, so that they want to use it as exclusive use. So one example is .office, which is owned by Microsoft, is exclusive use, but it doesn't qualify for the brand TLD because they don't have a trademark in just the word Office, but it is under the code of conduct. So this is not really intended to get into the brand generic discussion. We'll kind of figure that out, but this is just a listing of the types. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. Kathy, you've got your hand raised again. Please go ahead.
Okay. Well, since this is being set out, this is Kathy, of course, since this is being set out as a list of agreements, of consensus, that's what I thought Sophia asked the question about. So the question is there consensus around this new exclusive use registry, which sounds like it's going far beyond brand registries? And, of course, then the next line in the table, closed generics, which I don't believe there's consensus on, and it might be highly misleading to put it in this type of table, unless something's happened that I don't know. But there was, at least on the meetings I could figure out when they were and then attend, because they have been rotating into times that some of us have other commitments, regular commitments, because there was no doodle poll to see if we could make these, the new meeting times. When last we met, there was no consensus on closed generics, so I'm really surprised to see it in the table kind of as a fait accompli. So let me ask about that. Is there consensus around this exclusive use registry as Jeff outlined it, and where's the reflection in this table that closed generics is still a highly contested and concerning issue? Thanks.
So, Kathy, my apologies if there's this confusion. So the categories that are presented here, we're asking for consensus on the idea of multiple registry agreements versus the single base registry agreement discussion. The discussion in regards to what categories there are, such as closed generics and exclusive use, these are merely ones that have been suggested in the past and ones that we presented here in the work track too, to give individuals and participants an idea of what exactly might a different multiple TLD types be. We are not in any way making any decision or conclusion on what these different multiple categories are. We are merely talking about, in the event that there are multiple TLDs, in what form would ICANN sign a registry agreement with them. So in regards to closed generics, no, there is no consensus at the current time. That is a separate discussion we hope to have in the coming months.
Michael, may I respond?
Of course. Please go ahead, Kathy.
Thanks. But when people see something like this in a table where there is a call for consensus without qualifications, without footnotes, and without disclaimers, the way you've just done it, it looks official. And people will read it and think that this is the consensus. Not that this is a set of examples, but that this is what's moving forward for discussion. So, you know, it's very confusing, and I think it might be misleading. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. I think that we put this documentation together roughly this week, so I think that's a good suggestion we can put in there to make this much clearer. Jeff, I'm sorry, you've had your hand raised for a while, and then I've got Kurt as well.
Yeah, thanks. So this is Jeff Newman. I see Kathy's point. So let's revise this document to we can remove the chart. We can say that sort of the real point is it would be beneficial for the work track to recommend a scaled back core agreement with additional specifications per category, and then add kind of a parenthetical in the case in which there are additional categories, with the goal of a single agreement with a more clear, structured, and efficient method for obtaining exemptions. And then we don't really need the chart in there. We could just have a sentence saying the issue of which categories, if any, are approved for future application windows was not tackled by this work track, except for the discussion on closed generics, which will obviously be in a different section in the preliminary report. So let's do that so that we don't have that confusion, because I see Kathy's point. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff, and I think that's good feedback as well. Kurt, please go ahead.
Thanks. So this is Kurt Pritz. So I'll be less coherent than I hope, but you know, to zoom up a little bit, so I'm for a single agreement, and I'm for lightweight, streamlined ways to amend the agreement in several different ways. So categories, I think, tend to anticipate what future business models are, and then when they're implemented, they restrict innovation because there's new business models that don't fit into the existing categories. So I think we should strive for ways to provide relief from contractual requirements in cases where, you know, if a registry wants relief from that contractual requirement and can show that that relief doesn't upset, you know, our basic policies, then they should be relieved, or there should be ways to add contractual requirements for specific registry models. And so to briefly put it, I'm for a single agreement, but with clauses pre-identified where relief can be granted rather easily. And then second, with regard to the chart, so I don't find it too offensive, but what's sort of missing from the chart is you know, some blanks where if there is this sort of category, what sort of relief are they looking for? Why form this category? Because the reason for forming a category is to gain some sort of advantage in some way. And maybe instead of the category, we look at the advantages themselves. You know, what contractual requirements are relieved for these categories, and then just look at all the different items from which we might require relief, and then create a way of granting that, you know, for different TLDs. So not as good as I hope, but there it is.
Thank you, Kurt. That's a good suggestion, I think, and one that we'll take back. So with the discussion on the, as far as moving towards something in that area for the TLD categories, I think we'll probably need to wait a little bit for the full working group to reach agreement on that, unless they already have, and I'm just not up to speed on that. But definitely very positive feedback. Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to comment on the registry agreement summary and proposed path forward, such as the questions that we have in the bottom? Hearing none, I will go ahead and close the discussion on this and open the discussion on the registrant protections. We get that document moved up, please. Thank you. Thank you very much. Excuse me. So for the registrant protections, I put this one together, and again, this was done this week, so there are definitely enhancements that can be made to this to make it much easier to understand. So if there are any questions and confusion, please don't hesitate to stop me halfway through and raise your hand. Kurt, I'm assuming that that's old hand, or do you have an additional point to make? Thank you. So, for the registrant protections, this is a topic that deals with the areas that the protections that I can introduce in the registry agreement in order to protect registrants, hence the term registrant protections. Under this discussion, we have talked about the emergency back-end registry operator, the EBRO, in terms of its funding through the Continued Operations Instrument, COI, as well as what triggers the EBRO through failures of critical registry functions. We've also discussed background screening of applicants and whether we can make improvements to that process. So what I'm going to do here is I've broken this into three different areas, the Continued Operations Instrument deliberations, five critical registry functions deliberations, as well as the background screening. I will stop at each one of these as I summarize the points here, and all as well as the high-level agreement to open the floor for discussion. So starting with the Continued Operations Instrument deliberations, WorkTrack has received a number of comments on the limitations and challenges that were associated with COI requirements. The Global Domains Division Program Implementation Review also acknowledged that challenges and suggested alternative funding options for us. With that said, the WorkTrack did go through did acknowledge the critical role of having contingency plans to address registry failures. However, several proposals were suggested to replace the COI with other funding mechanisms. This included a pooled insurance model to fund emergency measures, eliminate the COI, have ICANN fund EBRO, and temporarily maintain an abandoned registry out of its regular revenue stream, and seek proposals from EBROs, past or future, to see if there's a fixed annual fee that they could be paid for the year to cover any eventuality, any event that might happen. Sorry, I'm just going to adjust my screen very briefly so I can see this. I am now on the fourth point down on the Continued Operations Instrument Deliberation Summary. In addition, some have proposed eliminating the COI and EBRO programs in favor of requiring each backend registry to be required to continue to provide the critical registry functions in the event of a front-end registry operator's failure. If this were to happen, there still may be a need to maintain some form of the EBRO in the extremely rare case of the failure of the backend registry operator, if the backend registry service provider fails itself. CC2 comments in regards to the COI tended to support the initial deliberations of the working track. Most comments suggested getting rid of the COI as much as possible. Where ICANN chose to keep the COI, it is noted by the Registry Stakeholder Group that the letter of credit is the most efficient method of implementation, but it was encouraged that ICANN to be more flexible about calculating the size of the letter of credit as well as the determined language for the letter of credit. noting that from the temperature in the room, or from the deliberations, there seems to be consensus to explore a different method to fund the e-grow process. While there is no consensus on what method to explore itself, it would do well for the working group to discuss these methods and what models would be best. So for next steps, I've highlighted a couple of areas that we could seek to move down this area, and that would be to look at and analyzing some of the suggestions that we've already received with the goal to provide a recommendation to have an alternative method for funding or to keep the COI as it is. So would anyone like to weigh in on this discussion? Do you feel that we have high-level agreement to get rid of the to find a alternative method of funding the COI? Please do keep in mind that we will get into the critical registry functions discussion next, but this is keeping in mind that we keep the e-bureau process as is, of course. But seek to find other ways of funding. All right, I don't see any hands raised or any questions in the chat, so I will move on to the 5 critical registry functions deliberations. So the designation of the 5 critical registry functions in the applicant guidebook was discussed within the working track. There were no specific proposals to date that have either advocated for modifying, adding, or deleting any of the functions from the list. In response to work trap questions, ICANN staff indicated that emergency thresholds had been reached 27 times. This was as of 17 February 2017. But EGRO had not been triggered in those instances. It was noted that last week, however, ICANN did trigger the EGRO for the first time. And we'll discuss that when we move towards the next steps. Until last week, upon IGDD's evaluation of each individual case, ICANN determined that it would have less of a security and stability impact to assist the RSP through resolution rather than activating an EBRO event. Jeff, I have you coming through on audio. Did you have a question? No? Okay. So while some of the CC2 comments mention maintaining registrant protections, re-examining the entire EBRO concept in order to allow better competition and expanding protections, the majority of comments leaned in the direction of not requiring closed registries such as Specification 13 brands to be subject to registrant protections, as in many cases the registry is the single registrant for these TLDs. Other CC2 comments looked at the aspect of when a registry fails financially, but technology does not appear to be a problem to allow the TLD to remain with the existing registry service provider. So from these deliberations, there does appear to be consensus to keep the EBRO process in cases where there is a failure of the backend service provider. There's also consensus thus far in keeping the triggers for the EBRO process the same as in the applicant guidebook, with the existing critical registry functions. This working track is at this point also recommending that single registrant TLDs, including those under Specification 13, be exempt from EBRO requirements. As for next steps, the working track may want to... Hold on, Kathy, do you mind if I go over the next steps really quick? Did you want to jump... Sorry, could you please wait until I go over the next steps? Or? You really need to jump in. Sorry, that sounds bad when I say it like that.
Would it be okay to ask 2 quick questions now?
Yes, it would. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Michael. No, I know that desire to get to the end. It makes sense. But the underpinnings, let me ask, are single registrant TLDs, brand TLDs, exempt from EBRO now, EBRO requirements now, is one question. And the other question I have is, with the critical functions deliberation, is anything changing about the underlying data? So somebody goes belly up, the data escrow requirements, and you know, who is requirements others, so that communication with the proxy, so that registrants can be contacted that their registry has changed. So question about registrant data and how that's being handled and whether anything's being changed and how brand TLDs are handled currently under these emergency requirements.
Thank you, Kathy, for the questions. So to quickly answer to the brand question, currently brand registries are required to follow the same eBureau requirements that all other TLDs are required. This exists for those code of conduct exempt TLDs as well as specification 13 brand TLDs. In regards to the registrant data and whether or not any changes have been made on that, the answer would be no. We have not made any recommendations or changes to the existing structure as it is and how it functions. I would like to call on somebody with a better technological understanding than myself to perhaps answer this question in more detail if they are able. Any takers? Unfortunately, I don't hear anyone, but...
Michael, is it Jeff?
Jeff. Oh, I hear you, Jeff. Go on ahead. Going ahead, Jeff. I think your car door just shut, but go ahead.
Sorry, this is Jeff. Can you guys hear me? I was not able to be heard for a minute there.
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay, sorry about that. I just got in my car. On the registrant data question, I'm a little curious as to the background of that question. At this point, if there's a registry failure, the first goal is to make sure that the registry, the DNS, and all the critical functions stay up, so the eBureau would be called into question. If that happens, there's no need at that point to notify the registrants because most of them are probably unaware of who the registry is in the first place. So as long as there's no outage or anything like that, there's not really a need to notify the registrant, at least for the registry to notify the registrant. I'm not sure about the question of escrow. I could go into at some other point the way it works now and how data is retrieved out of escrow, but maybe it would help a little bit more, Kathy, just to understand what's behind the question. Thanks.
Michael, may I respond?
Yes, Kathy, you have the floor.
Okay, great. So, Jeff, let's say we are switching registries. A registrant is switching registries. I'll come to a later question about registrant protections under various registry policies and kind of asking about that, but that's for later. So if you switch registries, you could very well be switching registry rules. And obviously, as a registrant, you'd have to know about that. We're finding that there are very different sets of registry rules between registries. And so this is, you know, in the past when I don't know how many registrars have gone down, but, you know, there's some distinct incidents that remain in our mind when a registrar has gone down, and I believe the registrants were notified. If a registry goes down, particularly in this age of very different registry policy, I think we're going to need to notify the registrants and give them the new rules. Otherwise, how can they be bound by them or even know about them? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff again, just to respond. There seems to be an assumption in there that there are different rules for registrants upon a eBureau, and that's not the case. With an eBureau at this point, the only thing that's done is the registrations are maintained, and the DNS is maintained. It's just a switching again provider, and then what happens is then a decision needs to be made at some point of whether there's going to be a different front-end provider. If so, how, what are the rules about that? And certainly at that point, yeah, absolutely, registrants should be notified And that's, I think, defined in the EBRO process itself of how the EBRO works. There's a whole document that controls the functions of an EBRO and how an EBRO does the actual transition. But merely switching out a VeriSign or just as an example, a registry backend that was using COCA to switching to a backend that uses VeriSign, that's not going to have any impact on the registrant other than potentially an outage. And, of course, at that point, the registry, the backend would notify the registrars, and the registrars would notify the registrants because the registrars are the ones with relationships with the registrants. I'm not sure I necessarily see an issue that's different, but certainly maybe there's something I'm missing. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. And I don't, Kathy, I don't hear you coming back. Oh, here you are. Go ahead.
So, but Jeff, what you're saying is EBRO is a change of the back-end function. I thought EBRO was also for front-ends. So when the registry itself, I mean, not the organization performing back-end functions, but the registry itself, should it have problems, then EBRO is part of the continuation of that as well, isn't it? And that involves all sorts of jurisdiction and other issues for registrants. I believe there are more implications than we think.
So, Kathy, I can answer that. That EBRO only occurs when one of the thresholds has been reached with who is, EPSRS, DNS. I can't, it's almost 1 a.m. I can't hear them all off the top of my head. But as for financial, my recollection is that it's not mentioned within the registry agreement, specifically on the front end. However, if we're talking about termination of the registry agreement, then that's when ICANN does have the ability to perform an analysis and whether or not to transfer the oversight of the registry itself. Maybe I'm getting off topic here. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, do you want me to jump in? Kathy's hit on the actual, Kathy's hit on confusion, which a number of people have, which I've been trying to get us to clarify for some time now, because it is messaged, Kathy's right, it's messaged as a failure of the front end, when in actuality it is only a failure of the back end. We need to do a better job in making sure that people understand that it is a back-end failure. The change of a front-end registry is done through a completely different process. It may be the case that there is a front-end change ultimately after a period of time when it's an EBRO, but there is a specifically defined process to do that. But that's not what invokes the EBRO.
Thank you, Jeff.
That makes things much clearer. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next steps area, and I think we might end with that today. And just one moment. All right, so for the additional, for next steps, we might want to consider additional deliberations and possible data requests. So for the work track may want to examine whether or not single registrant model registries should be exempt from other registrant protections such as data escrow. This is one area that was mentioned in the CC2 comments. We did not have a lot of discussion on it, but we may want to examine that to see if we can make an additional recommendation in that area. And before I get comments on that, just let me finish the rest of these next steps. Recently, the EBRO was triggered for the case of .wed. details of this are still not completely clear. However, the working track may want to consider analyzing further details in regards to that matter when available. And the goal of that would be to analyze the reasoning of ICANN to use EVRO as a mechanism as adverse to their determination not to act on EVRO in the past when the right emergency thresholds were reached. A possible result of this may be end in some recommendations for clearer guidelines on whether or not to implement EVRO when emergency thresholds have been reached. Now, that is a new case, and we may not get into it too much right away, but it's definitely something we might want to consider. There are also still discussions ongoing about the desire to trigger an EVRO where there is a failure of the front-end registry operator, and this is touching on your question, Kathy, and the back-end registry service provider is both capable and willing to provide the critical registry functions until such time that either the front-end registry failure ends or a new front-end registry operator emerges. In addition, further discussion is needed on whether the back-end registry service provider should be required by ICANN in some, sorry, this is cut off on my screen, I'm just trying to find the, okay, in some fashion to continue to provide the critical registry functions in the event of a front-end operator failure. The goal of this would be to come to a resolution. If we can make a recommendation on this matter at this stage, we may not be able to make a recommendation about continued registry service in the event of front-end registry operator failure, but we should resolve on our capacity to be able to make such a recommendation. So with that, I will open the floor for the next 2 minutes or so if anyone has any questions. We have not reached the background screening, but I think we'll leave that to the email list and seek feedback from there. So I don't hear anyone raising any questions. Does anyone have any other business that they wanted to talk about? I'm hearing crickets. So with that, I think we'll close it with that then, huh? Give you 3 minutes back for the 2 minutes, I guess, now.
Next meeting, Michael, Cheryl.
Next meeting. Yes, my apologies. Next meeting was mentioned at the beginning of the call, but it will be on January 19th at 6 a.m. Oh, I'm sorry, January 18th at 21 UTC. So with that, Sophia and I would like to say thank you very much for joining us in 2017, and we hope to look forward to seeing you all in 2018. For those of you traveling during this holiday season, please be safe and enjoy your holidays. Thank you, and I'm Michael Fleming, your host, signing off for the rest of 2017.
Bye, everybody. Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Sophie.
And once again, thank you everyone for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.